Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Gonna take it.
And basketball analysis with over 70 years combined experience. This is the Bob Ryan and Jeff Goodman podcast.
NBA, some college, a little bit of everything.
You know, what can I say? But it wasn't going to happen here with him. I was okay with it because it wasn't about talent, I didn't think.
All right, let's get right to it.
Well, hey, everybody, it's Gary Tanguay along with Bob Ryan. It is the Bob Ryan, Gary Tanguay podcast. We are driven by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Networks. How about these NFL playoffs, man? It is something else. It is time to get in on the action with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. What a game that Green Bay game was. Mm. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place a $5 bet. That's $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. Okay, so I want to get to the Celtics-Denver game on Friday night. And I'll start with a question. Was it a moral victory? The Celtics lost 102-100. Was it a moral victory for Boston?
No, that's not my personal idea of what a moral victory is. But it was not a damaging loss, for sure. Number one, you need a loss. You don't want to go 41-0 going into the playoffs. None could be more frightening than that. So that's good. We got the loss out of the way. Right. I'm not facetious. I'm serious. That's the way I think. Not everybody agrees with that.
No, line I know. Well, look what happened with the Patriots. I mean,
not everybody agrees with that line of thinking, but I subscribe to it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, number two, you lost to a very good team. I have no problem. The two great players were phenomenal. You know, at one point in that game, Jokic and Murray were 26 for 34 between them. And Jokic doing it his way, his I'm going at my pace and you can't stop me, going from wherever I want to go at whatever pace I choose. And Murray, just like every great guard we've ever seen, having a night making all kinds of shots. And he's at the peak of his game, that's for sure. No, I don't mind losing to them. I would have been much more upset losing to a team, you know, an inferior team. But there were things that were there, and like once the game was over, I get an email from a fan who was I agreed with. The last 13.4 seconds were a disaster, and the last couple of minutes weren't good. This is the one remaining but about Joe Mazzulla's stewardship of this team is that they aren't good in those situations.
They don't have
enough of a reliable plan, that was utterly helter skelter coming out of that timeout at 13. Now, granted, Denver had the advantage of having the foul to give, and Celtics knew that, and they had to factor that in, and they did, and they wound up getting the ball back with 4 seconds to go as a result. But that's the big thing that I take away from that. But in general terms, it took a tremendous effort by two all-star players to beat them, so I don't feel horrible about it.
It was a great game.
It was.
I mean, it was a great game to watch. The Celtics did not play great, but it was a great game to watch. I want to talk about the final 2 minutes. And because I have a lot of problems with this. In games like this, I turn into a fan and I lose my objectivity. And I always go, well, oh, hell, damn it. Why didn't we win the game? We had the lead, and of course, a lead against Denver means nothing. I remember during the Paul Pierce era where they would rely on him too much. And sometimes at the end of the day, it was just a problem. Now, when Garnett came on board, you started to pass the ball a little bit, move the ball around. Ray could hit a, you know, a game winner and so forth. But what I saw in the first half was the Celtics were overpassing to me. They were overpassing the ball. And that's something I saw with the 08 team early on. And then you mentioned in the fourth quarter, I'm like, okay, now where's the ball distribution? Now you've got five guys on the floor that can win the game for you. Mm-hmm. Where's the ball distribution? Right? So yeah. They go to Tatum, and I get it. I mean, he's your best player, but you got to do better than that. I mean, we've seen it. And that's what frustrates me, Bob, about the mentality of the NBA. And it's not just here. You'll see him in the first three quarters play so well. And in that fourth quarter, they go to iso ball. And I go, why? Why?
And it's, there were several times that they were searching out the best three, instead of worrying about getting a basket.
Well, okay.
And that point, you know, three would have won the game. Two would have tied the game. I'll take the two. And I wonder, I don't know. I'm not at practice. I'm not involved. Right. I have no idea. I don't know if any writer knows, frankly, because they don't get to go to practice until they're shooting free throws at the end. They don't know the inner workings of the team the way I was privileged to do literally 50 years ago. Go to practice every day, know the numbers plays, know every play, know who's supposed to do what. I don't see plays anymore with teams. You know, the Celtics would come out of a timeout. They run the 14 play for Nelly. I'm serious. They run the six play. They'd run at the 1A, one. They'd run the plays. And I don't know if these guys, in those moments, if they go in the huddle and they say, all right, we're going to run the six play. We're going to run the eight play. We're going to run Zoom, whatever we want to call it. Or whether they just, you know, I don't know what they do. But it doesn't appear that they run plays. I'm not just the Boston Celtics, by the way. This is the NBA.
Well, I mean, we saw that with I think we saw that. Well, I don't know if it was so much with Doc, with that crew. But with Brad, he would write up a play and they wouldn't run it.
It appeared to be that Brad, yeah, he got known for having being good coming out of a timeout. Yeah. And he got a reputation for that. So, and I don't know how much, you know, I don't. So it's something.
Even Doc has said with other teams, I'll call a play and they don't run it. I don't know. I don't think it was with Garnett, but with other teams, I'll call a play and they don't run it.
Well, I mean, this is something, you know, that this is a flaw that they have. There's no doubt.
It is. And when you get when you get into the finals facing Denver, that's an issue. Now, here's the other issue that you touched upon. From three Friday night, 14 for 44. There were two times the Celtics, I counted, had four or five offensive rebounds in a row.
Yeah.
And they didn't convert. They did not convert. This team, when the three isn't falling, has to learn to go to the basket. They have to learn to go to the basket.
A and B, they now have a 7-3 presence who can score low.
Thank you.
And he, who, by the way, scored the first 11 points of the game, had 15 in the first quarter and 19 at the half and two in the second half, and didn't get the ball. And although granted, he hit his first threes at 7-3 to start the game, but he also did other stuff. They have to remember now they have that asset. You made a good point. They can put five guys on the floor, all of whom were very capable of making the needed shot, and actually seven if you had either Hauser or Pritchard out there. So it's not panic. It's annoying.
Oh no, it's just frustrating because I thought they were going to win the game.
Yeah,
I'm fanboy, Bob.
No, that's okay. No, I want to speak to your point about. I'm thinking during that game, often at moments, because I'm a staunch defender of the sanctity of the regular season. I refuse to succumb to the late 20, early first 21st century talk show driven dialogue that the only thing that matters is playoffs, and you judge everybody by rings, you judge everybody by playoffs,
right.
and you put down the regular season. I don't care what sport we're talking about, except that you can bet on it. Well, that game was proof that there's a reason why people pay their big money to go to a regular season game when you've got a really good team, which we have, that's entertaining. And that game was worth the price of admission. That game was worth the price of two admissions.
That's no question. It was a great game.
That shows you these great athletes playing at a high level.
We've talked about it. because of the balance of the league and because of the other players like the OKCs and the Indianas, and I know Halliburton got her, you know, all of that, you turn on an NBA, you could pretty much find a good game every night. So I agree with you.
These are tremendous players and doing great things. They, you know, they are the best at their trade in the world. And yeah, I mean, I just get angry when people put down their regular season because the fact is that you got to have reason for fans to have something where you just can't sit around.
The only argument, the only time I will lend credence to that argument is the NHL. And I'm not a hockey guy, but man, I used to talk to Felger. I go, it's like December, whatever. And they're going, icing. I'm going, wake me when the playoffs come. Because.
Well, having covered the NBA extensively, you know, back in the day, and knowing what a dreary February night can be at times, there's a period of time when it's not, but even then, a great game could break out. And I'm just saying that the regular season does matter. And the regular season is, the fans deserve a show, and boy did they get one the other night, a really, really good show. By the way, talk about, isn't Jokic amazing? I mean, he just moves at whatever pace he gets wherever he wants to go. And he has that nice little tippy toe, you know, it's not a jump shot. It's a, I don't know what you call it, you know, it's a European flip or whatever the hell, you know, he's got, but he's a treasure.
Did you see on Twitter, by the way, go follow Bob Ryan. It was Celtics at CLNS. CLNS. Our leader, Nick, put together a great comparison when you talked about Bird and Jokic. You saw it on Twitter.
Yes.
And you saw like the Bird passes and the Jokic passes.
Yes.
And it was fabulous.
Yeah. Well, the over the head particularly. Absolutely. They know where they, the thing of Larry knew where people ought to be, the smart players, and he could throw to spots like a football guy, the football coach, quarterback throwing a ball to a spot, not to the receiver. And Larry could do that with guys that he trusted. We could never exaggerate how smart that group of guys were on the floor.
And, okay. You know, now, another thing I want to get to about Friday night's game that concerned me. I want to talk about Jamal Murray. I think Jamal Murray is one of the most underrated players in the NBA because he plays with Jokic.
Yeah.
And I think he's often forgotten. And you could say 1A. I am not going to say 1 and 2. I mean, Murray's a 1. I mean, not a position. I mean, not a center. But
yeah.
I mean, Jokic, I get it, is the guy. But Murray's pretty damn close. And I was in awe of the way he played because I felt, while Jokic is going to get his 35, he gets to where he's going to go. Murray, in that game, Friday night against the Celtics, said, okay, these guys aren't beating us. He kept them in the game.
Oh, God.
And he's such a wonderful player.
I'm sure they wouldn't want to trade him for any guard in the league.
No way.
I mean, and there's some great guards. I mean, you know, the Halliburton is having a great year. Lillard, all those guys are having great years, a lot of them. But nobody's having a better year than nobody's any better. And SGA, all right, now he's the new gold standard almost.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
But they still wouldn't trade him. They're not
on this team because he's the perfect complement. Obviously, there's no ego between the two. We heard Murray speak about his teammate who lost his coach. The assistant coach with Golden State, who passed away in his sleep, who had coached Jokic in Serbia. And Murray spoke eloquently about that, how they were so close. I mean, we all know chemistry, Bob. You know, there's only one ball.
And, by the way, if we play that, my Bob Ryan's U.S. versus international all-star game, Murray is starting guard on the other team.
Canada?
He's Canadian.
Canadian. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge fan, and I just don't think he get, because of Jokic, I get it. But I'm sitting there and I'm watching this game and I'm going, and you're right about the five guys, right? I mean, the Celtics need to distribute the ball at the end of the game, but I'm thinking, okay, Tatum and Brown had bad shooting nights. I'm not gonna fall off the cliff. It happens. No. I thought they'd shot too many threes. We've talked about how they need to get to the basket and use Porzingis in those situations. But boy, I looked at Tatum and Brown in that game, and then I saw Murray and Jokic, and I thought to myself, Jason and Jalen, you still got a ways to go. You got a little bit. You're there. You know, you're almost there, but not yet. That's kind of what I took from the game.
The ultimate takeaway that we have is you wouldn't mind seeing that as a rematch in May.
It'd be tremendous.
You wouldn't mind seeing that.
Well, and then you could look like if you want to go for the Celtics, you know, and I'm sure, you know, a Celtic fan, or if you want to be optimistic and not frustrated like me, because I'm so demanding of this team. I expect a lot of this team. Mm-hmm. This is it. No more excuses.
Oh, it's an out team.
This is it. I mean, this is no more excuses. You guys got the tools. But you can say, look, okay, Jalen and Jay, the two Jays had a bad shooting night, and they still almost won.
Yeah, I lost by two.
They lost by two. And they could have won at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they could almost, you know, so while Tanguay is getting a little frustrated, you know, still, you could say that Murray and Jokic had to have great nights and combined for 70 points to barely win when the Celtics didn't shoot well. So
the NFL season is wrapping up, and there's still time to get in on the action with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place a $5 bet. That's $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. Now, the app is so easy to use, and there are so many different ways to bet, like live same-game parlays. Find bets in the new Explore tab. Make a parlay in the Parlay Hub, the best way to find popular parlays, and more. So visit FanDuel.com/Boston and make your first bet a layup. FanDuel, official partner of the NFL. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, Kentucky, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700, or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, by the way, our boys have an interesting stretch coming up.
Fill me in.
Well, they got three road games this week. Now at Houston, who are, by the way, we're going to talk about home road in a minute. Houston at home is 16-6, by the way. Okay. At Dallas, not a day in the beach. And at Miami, we know how much we respect Miami. So I'll tell you right now, I'll take two out of three. I'll take two out of three. Then they have a five-game homestand, which is the Clippers, who are playing well.
They are. They
have found themselves, and the Harden thing is now working out better than we thought it would. New Orleans, who are respectable. That all depends, of course, if you know who is in the lineup, because he's always hurt. And then Indiana, and we can testify.
That'll be a game.
What Indiana can be. A team from Los Angeles called the Lakers, I believe they're called.
Well, LeBron's going to show up for that one.
And finally, Memphis. Okay, they got problems. They got injury problems.
They got issues. The Lakers are struggling. They're in 8th spot right now, but you know LeBron's showing up for that one.
LeBron is it's already got what's circled. You know when that one's circled on his calendar.
I agree.
You know that. And so, I mean, so it's a, that's a stretch that takes us 2 weeks.
You know. So, Bob, what you're saying is from this Denver game, now the monkey is off their back, if you will, and there's the pressure of not losing at home will help?
I just think they don't have that. That's a thing that would hang out there all year. You know, maybe it's just me, and maybe not. That never entered any of their minds, and they always, of course, they're the athletes. They go into every game thinking they're going to win. That's the way they're bred. That's the way they're taught. That's the way they're supposed to. The rhetoric they're supposed to give us. We never go into a game where we don't think we're going to win. All right, fine. But I just want to have that pressure. They weren't going to go 41-0, but right. Let's get this out of the way. They lost the game to a very good team. It's no disgrace. And you know, we've talked about what we don't like, and it's coachable, it's verifiable, it's rectifiable, and we move on. So that's that. But you know, you and I were talking the other day. We're talking about I'm curious about the home road in this league this year, and I looked up the records of what the home and away records were for each of the Celtics 17 championship teams seasons. Now keep in mind that until 1974, there were a bunch of neutrals, okay, new at games. People will love this. In 56, 57, when they won their first championship, home 24-4. Away 11-18.
Really?
Neutral 9-6. Okay. Then they started the dominance in 59-60, 25-2 at home, 24-9 away. 10-5 neutral. We go all the way up. And of course, the you realize it was the 72-73 team that won 68 games did not win a championship because Havlicek got hurt. We're 33-6 at home. And you ready for this? 32-8 on the road.
Wow.
How's that, ladies and gentlemen? Now, our 07-08 team, our last championship team, 35-6 at home, 31-10 on the road. That's greatness. That is coming every night to play. That is a test. That is exemplary. That is the most road games that they have won since the team that I just told you about, 72-73.
Yeah, Hondo's too, when Hondo got hurt, right.
So that's a standard. This team right now is 20-1 at home and 12-9 on the road. And they're in they're in a cluster. There's nobody is, you know, who's got the most road wins right now? A tie between Minnesota and OKC. As we speak, they've got 13. They're 13-9 Minnesota, 13-8 or OKC. The Celtics, Philadelphia, Knicks, and Miami all have 12 road wins. Okay. New Orleans has 12 road wins. They're interesting. They're 13-9 at home and 12-9 on the road. So that's respectable for them. There we go. And of course, I love the symmetry though of Detroit. Their symmetry is beautiful. They're 2-19 at home and 2-19 on the road. So they're very well balanced. I mean, but anyway, what I'm saying is this is not a great road team yet.
The league is not.
The league is not a great road team. It's a lot of 500-ish or a little around it.
Yeah. But, well, there's too many excuses, Bob, in my opinion, to sound like an old man here. There's too many excuses. We're on the road. It's the second night of a back-to-back. We're on the road. Oh, yeah. Some guys sit. Load management.
Oh, God.
Load management has an impact on it, you know? So I agree. I think there's sort of an excuse for being on the road, which didn't exist in years past.
I'll tell you, I just think that we really need to look back and appreciate how good 07-08 that team was. And I know that Doc... I looked this up, and it's. I know this sounds like an outlandish statement, but I really believe it. You can make a case that out of 82 games, they were out of one game all year. Out of where there was not a chance with the fourth with they were going to win that game in the fourth quarter. They lost a game at home to Miami in December of 07 by 18, and that was the one game. Every other loss was salvageable. Every other one was conceivable that they could have found a way to win the game. They weren't blown out. And then, of course, they were 35-6 at home. So we got to really salute, you know, in the history of the Celtics, and, you know, we all glorify, my generation glorifies the 50s and 60s guys and the 70s guys and all the great names. But you've got to give that big three, that Garnett, Pierce, Allen crew, that was just a season for the ages. It really a wonderful year.
Absolutely. How about that 86 season when they lost one?
Oh, yeah, 86. Yeah, that's a good question. 85, they were 41 at home, 27 and 14 on the road.
Really?
Which is very much in keeping. The year before, they were 29 and 12 on the road. And they were 84 when they won in 84. They were 33 and 8 at home. They were 62 and 20. They went 33 and 8 at home, 29 and 12 on the road. 27 and 14 in 80-81, the Bird's first championship. And there we go. So a lot of another good year, 64-65, they were 27 and 11. But the neutrals blow my mind, you know, the people today won't understand. Here's how many they played 15 neutral games in 57, 14 in 59, 15 in 60.
And that was what, like Augusta, Maine, Providence, Rhode Island.
But the doubleheaders, New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore.
Oh, right.
We hosted doubleheaders all, you know, we were one of the doubleheader cities. You know, one of my favorite nights ever in the Garden for history. And is that the 76ers were playing the Sonics in the first game of a doubleheader, and Wilt went for 52, which is no big deal for Wilt, you know. But he also missed 22 free throws, which is the record. He was 8 for 30, and he still had 52 points.
Because he went out with Russell.
So, doubleheaders. That's the
Did
way
you say the Sonics?
Yeah, the expansion Supersonics.
What was your first year, 66?
67. This was in December 1st, 1966.
Okay.
Went for 22 field goals, 8 free throws, 8 out of 30 from the
I didn't know this. I thought the Sonics came in later than that. Yeah. Our good friend Willie McDonough, the late great, his son Ryan McDonough, we know, has had an esteemed basketball career as a manager with the Celtics and with the Phoenix Suns. But on NBA.com, I thought it was very interesting because they teed him up for a question. And this is where headlines kill me. The headline was on NBA.com, and I'm paraphrasing, like, what can the Lakers and Suns do at the trade deadline? So I go, this looks interesting. Oh, it's Ryan. Okay, we all know Ryan. Okay, what's he got? And Ryan basically kind of said, and I'm sure, like, I don't know if Ryan was like, not much. But he spelled it out. I mean, you guys should really watch. He spelled it out. He went through all the players on the Suns. He knew all the salaries on the Suns. He knew all the salaries on the Lakers. And because both teams are so top heavy, they can't do a lot. So the question is, have the Lakers and the Suns shown you how not to do it?
Well, this is a risky run when it's not endemic to those two teams or to this sport. But, you know, putting too much money or excessive amount of money in the hands of too few people, whether you're talking about a pitching staff or you're talking about a defensive line or whether you're talking about the first line in hockey, you know, you have to really be careful. This is why judicious general managing in that regard is and cost effective approaches are important. Yeah, I understand. The Suns are clearly, I mean, I've been saying all year, once you get past Booker, who by the way had 52 points the other night, and Beal and Durant, many of those bench guys are in the Federal Witness Protection Program for basketball players. You know,
right.
How are these guys? They're not deep at all. There's no question. They are totally dependent on those three guys and to a disproportionate degree. The Lakers, even with the two guys playing well, and many nights lately, that AD is having a big year. Have you noticed? Nobody's talking about it. AD is putting up numbers all the time, every night. And LeBron is still capable of putting up big numbers. And then after that, you draw a line. Who's going to step up next? Who's the next? Who's the third guy? You know, the answer is, yeah, I understand. This is a risk. You run that risk. And then you have guys that, and I'll give Tom Brady, it's documented, you know, guys that understand the big picture and aren't greedy.
Right.
And want to be paid, but fairly, and they want to win. And they understand that I don't need to take all the money. I need teammates. You know, he proved, you know, he set the standard. And I don't know how many superstars are even close to that.
Well, yeah. Or you have to have owners like Golden State when they had KD. I mean, the Golden State owner was more than willing to go over the cap and pay all the fines. But it's an exorbitant fine. You know, I mean, it's a lot of money. So it's going to be interesting. The way I look at those two teams is if they're healthy at playoff time, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, right. Well, this, the West is gone. Oh, yeah, it's gone. That's true. That's true. But I'm just watching the Lakers. I mean, not watching them, but, you know, following them far. You know, it just seems that every night it's just those two guys, and then you don't know who the rotating third guy is, you know. So, you know, that's the team they have. But that's a very astute. Ryan, Hingham has his own, Ryan McDonough.
Yeah, check it. It's on NBA.com right now. He breaks it down, and I can't even try to replicate what he
said. By the way, since you brought up Ryan, earlier the month of January was the 20th anniversary of his father's death.
Really?
And Will, so that's a very quick 20 years in my mind. It's hard for me to believe it's 20 years. We deal in a lot of superlatives and a lot of big statements in life and all walks, and this never this and never that, and you know, there's never going to be anything like Will McDonough in Boston sports journalism. That there was a certain entree ability that he had that none of us have ever had. That there's something that he connected with those jocks, and I mean whether they were players, coaches, or front office people, in a way that no writer in my 55-year experience in Boston journalism has ever done. And he was remarkable. I'm just glad he played for our team. I hate to have played against him if I were the Herald or the Ledger or anybody else. I'll tell you that. My thoughts go out to Ryan and his family, you know, with Willie's.
Well, the Will McDonough story that I love is, and it was either you or Shaughnessy. I mean, that globe, back when people went into the office.
Yeah.
You know, you, McMullen, Shaughnessy, Ryan, McDonough, Le Monville, you know, the list goes on and on. You know, Franny Rosa, Kevin Paul DuPont, you know, Borgie. I mean, all you guys. You know, well, the phone would ring, and it would be like, you know, Al Davis, and he'd say, you know, hang on, you know, I'm talking to Red. You know, I mean, tell Al. You know, tell Al I got to go. I tell Al I'll call him back. I'm talking to Red.
My cubicle was next to his for many years. And my favorite part of the year was when the playoffs came in football. And Willie always did a preview stories, on the teams that were in the playoffs. And he did it by calling up the general managers of players, teams that played against them to get their evaluation. And he could use it, among other things. And I could still hear him with guys. He got on the phone and you talk about Al Davis. I'll give you another Al Davis story in a minute. And it's, hey, how's that juggernaut of yours? You know, I loved hearing I only heard the one side of the conversations, but they were priceless to hear, you know. Sure. Also, I heard him one day, you know, he didn't get along with Billy Sullivan at all. And Billy, they hated him.
Right. Okay.
And I actually heard this out of one day when he said to Billy Sullivan on the phone, he said, when you die, I'm going to be on the long list of people waiting to stand and piss on your grave. but that was one thing. Al Davis, when I first, in 1976, I was covering the baseball meetings in Los Angeles, and the Patriots were playing the famous game against the Raiders in Oakland. And I was sent up to cover, to do a sidebar. I hadn't been to a game all year. I had not been to a game.
Was that the one where Millen hit Sullivan?
No, that's the one.
That's 70. That was late.
Nothing to pass her. That's Ben Bryant's game.
Yeah.
So I had to get Al Davis for a preview story or something. And anyway, my entree was to the secretary. I'm a friend of Will McDonough's. And Al picked up the phone right away.
Oh, yeah.
I was a friend of Will McDonough's. That was the only entree that I needed with Al Davis. But he was friendly he played racquetball with Red. He was very friendly with Joe Cronin. He was very, right. I mean, and of course, Parcells, they were like,
They were buddies. Yeah. You could go back to, and we're getting off the NBA topic.
Yeah, we are.
That's all right. I'll say one more thing. You know, maybe this is an overstatement. I don't know. The success of the AFL and the success of pro football in general had a lot to do with Will.
Well,
I think he was the first real pundit that would come out. I mean, you know, first of all, he made all you guys a lot of money by being on TV first. Okay. You know, by going on the NBC thing, but like the AFL, I mean, I would think, you know, like he was tight with Davis and stuff. And I had heard he had job offers to go to work for teams. But, you know, I wasn't around then. But, you know, to have somebody but Willie in an AFL city, I would have thought was very beneficial to the conference, sure, to the league.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. No, he had a clout that extended, definitely had tentacles, no question.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. So anyways, Ryan, check it out on NBA.com.
Yeah.
Ryan spells that out for you. Okay, final question, final thing here. Udonis Haslem had his number 40 retired by the Miami Heat. Now, Udonis Haslem averaged 7.6 points per game, 6.6 rebounds per game. I love the fact that this guy's number is being retired. Now, people in Boston or elsewhere have said that the Celtics should be criticized by having so many numbers up there, right? And I understand it. I mean, I see the point. But when I saw Haslem, I was like, good for them. It reminded me of Nelly's number going up. Somewhere, Big Jim Luskatov is smiling. You know, I just thought it was a good gesture by the Heat.
Udonis Haslem spent his entire NBA career in Miami. It began in 03-04. After his first year out of college, he went to France. Since 2014-15, since then, at age 34, here is his games per year played. You ready? 37, 16, 14, 10, 4, 1, 13, and 7. They kept him in uniform as a 12th man for 8 years because of his contribution off the court. And, you know, his mentorship. They felt that 12th spot was important enough and to keep it for him. So he retired at age 42. We'll never see anything, obviously. That was a unique circumstance to them. Good for them is right. He was part of the fabric of Miami basketball for over 20 years. And, you know, I go back. I remember, you know, he was seeing him in the NCAA tournament in 2000. He played a great game as a freshman in a losing effort against Michigan State in the 2000 finals. That's how far back it goes. But good for them. I think it's wonderful.
So who was the next Celtic number to go up? It's a good one.
Well, you know, we know eventually that, you know, we got guys now. We know that.
Tatum, oh, sure. We got guys.
Yeah. But I don't think who's been left out. The standards they have, they set, they lowered the bar many years ago, frankly, kind of overdid it. And now they're stuck with, if he's in, why not him?
I got one guy.
Go ahead.
Because I have to make sure that I was very happy to see Max's number go up finally. I think they should retire Ainge.
Well,
player and as a GM.
Well, yeah. See, if you go as right, if you justify it on that basis easily, the combination.
They should.
The combination of there's nobody else.
Because look, here's the thing. You know, Ainge is a player, two titles, correct? 84, 86?
Yeah, 84 and 86.
Yeah, okay, so two titles. And when he came back to run the team, things changed. And I don't know if Garnett comes here. Like, I remember I was doing the Celtics pregame. I remember talking to Danny. And when they made the Ray Allen deal, you know, Danny said to me, he goes, I'm not done, right? And they tried to get Arnett, you know, and Garnett had concerns about the team and the city and so forth. When the Ray Allen deal got done, Danny knew if I can get this done, that's another chip. And he stayed on Kevin. And I think he was telling Donnie Marshall, who's playing, you know, we're not done. We're still in the hunt. You know, and I don't know if they get Garnett without Danny Ainge.
No, that's a very good point. People should remember that two games, pivotal games in their history, that Danny Ainge played a vital part. And that was in 84. Game 7, Danny Ainge gave him a spark in the second quarter. That wasn't a great game, by the way. The series was great, but it didn't. But this Game 7 wasn't a great game. It was, you know, that. But Danny came off the bench and gave him a big spark in that game. They needed it at that point. They weren't really going that great at that moment. And then in the Jordan 63 point game, Danny had 25 points and came on it. And believe me, of all the people that guarded Michael, which includes everybody but Spider, you know, the janitor, he guarded him the best that day. He at least neutralized him to a degree for some minutes when he now. So just remember this great contribution to those two.
And quite frankly, I think that he had. Who knew what was going to happen with Kyrie? Right? I mean, who knew?
Oh.
And I think he takes heat for that unjustifiably. I thought it was the right move to make. I thought it was, well, I didn't see the risk at all.
You got to live with him to understand it, you know, and I mean, Kyrie, you know, if you don't live with him, you don't understand.
You don't know, right.
And,
right.
I mean, because I will say this, he's one of the handful of gifted talents that ever played guard in the NBA. To this day, you see what he's doing lately? He's on a big roll, averaging over 30 in the last five
years. I know, that's the
and
fresh, you know.
He's got talent up the ass, and he's extraordinarily talented. He's a very complicated human being. I won't, you know, that's as far as I'll go. That is undeniable. He's a complicated human being, and to a higher degree than many other people. And he's a handful to have on your roster and in your organization. But boy, when that game starts, he can play.
And, you know, I thought that was I still give Danny credit for making the move.
Yeah,
I just do.
Oh, no, Danny.
I do. All right, Bob. FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Networks, bringing you Bob Ryan, Gary Tagway here. NFL playoffs. What do you like, by the way? I'm rooting for the Lions.
I'd love to root for the Lions for sure. I'm betting. If I were a betting man, if I choose to indulge in it, I like the Ravens. I do.
Yeah, I do too. I think
the 49ers pulled themselves together in time to beat the Packers. But clearly this oncoming train is the Ravens. They are.
My wife asked me this morning, Chiefs or Buffalo, and I said, you know what? I think I'm going to go with the Bills. But yeah. By the time you guys watch this, we'll know the answer. Yeah. Anyways, so the NFL playoffs underway. Get in on the action with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. I'm going to try to get Bob to bet a dollar. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place a $5 bet. That's $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. Bob Ryan, we'll talk to you next week.
Hello.